This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Well, hello, everybody. This is Hal.
And this is Melanie.
And we want to welcome you to another episode of Making Biblical Family Life Practical. What's up these days?
Oh, we're having quite a week because we're getting ready to get on the road. We've got two Teach Them Diligently conferences in the next 2 weeks.
We are actually speaking at five different locations in five different states in the next couple of weeks.
Wow.
Are you aware of that? So we've got a church, we've got a support group, we've got two homeschooling conventions, and a men's conference to go to.
So it's busy around here. It's kind of crazy, and I know I sound like I'm holding my nose because I've got a horrible cold, which makes all this much worse.
That's been going around the family, and we, being a family, we share everything, including our illnesses.
And we're also busy getting ready to launch Love, Honor, and Virtue, our new book. Mm-hmm. So that's, it's,
yeah.
There's not much rest around here,
but
anyway, today we want to talk about education after high school.
Right.
What, you know, all of our kids have gone to college.
Mm-hmm.
But not everybody needs to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
That's an option for some. In fact, you had some statistics, Hal, that were really interesting. I saw you were looking at earlier. Tell me about that.
Well, it's kind of interesting, you know, that I kind of grew up with the expectation I was going to go to college. And I just read that 66% of high school graduates go on to college, although only 30% of them are reaching their bachelor's degree. So there's some of that's
telling me about half of those that are going don't belong there.
Or you know, some of them, I guess, maybe 2-year programs. But really, there is a lot of attrition along the way. And one of the things I find really alarming, and this has changed since you and I were students, is the amount of debt that these young people are taking on. They said the average 2016 college graduate left college with $37,000 in student loan debt.
Wow. You know, our third son is about to graduate from college, and ours have been able to do it debt-free, but it takes a lot of work. And
right.
It's not something, if you have to take on that work or the debt, that's not something you want to do without a clear idea of why you're going to college and what you want to do there.
Right.
And so, you know, we have this idea that that's the thing to do, but there are other alternatives. And we've got somebody really interesting in the studio today that we're going to talk about a different method,
a different view,
something else approach. You can do.
Yeah. We've got on the line with us today, we have Ken Auer. He's a longtime friend of ours and a longtime leader in the homeschooling and educational community in our state. And he is the founder and the principal of Role Model Software. Ken, are you still with us?
I am.
Great. Ken, we appreciate you joining us today.
Can you tell us something about Role Model? Where did that name come from even?
Well, multiple levels. When I was just starting the company and we were trying to come up with a name, I guess was kind of inspired. One of the things that we do in software is we model the real world. And we often talk about different roles, different objects plays. And as I was doing it, I was also trying to figure out, you know, how to mix my biblical worldview in with my business. And thought about, you know, trying to model it after the ultimate role model, Jesus Christ. So it all kind of came together and we came up with Role Model Software. And in addition to that, I already knew that I had some experience with apprenticeship in training up software developers and wanted to do some more of that. And that just kind of seemed to fit the name. So we just went with it.
Okay. Now that's something that you have spoken about in our local homeschooling community for many years, is that idea of the role that apprenticeship, that the, maybe you just want to say the hands-on training, and you know, hands-on, you kind of think of guiding the hands of a workman in a workshop, and yet really all of it, the one-on-one kind of discipleship model for apprenticeship. I mean, can you tell us sort of what prompted that interest for you? Because you said you had some experience with it and you wanted to set out with your own company to really make that a sort of a cornerstone of how you do business.
Yeah, I kind of stumbled upon it by accident. You know, I got out of college. I had a computer science degree and fell into a project that was supposed to be the next generation of a network management system. And that brought me to object-oriented programming, which I had never heard about in college. In fact, most of the people around me hadn't heard about it. And I found out more and more of the professional software developers didn't have a computer science degree. Some of them had engineering degrees. Some of them had this or that. And started wondering, like, what does a computer science degree actually do for me to help me learn how to build software? And I've had some internships in college, and I felt like I learned a lot more from the internships than I had from the college degree. So as time went on and I just kind of examined this more and more, right about the same time I heard about this thing called homeschooling, I started saying, you know what, I wonder if the way we educate people is the best way, certainly not the only way, considering some of the best software developers I ever worked with didn't have computer science degrees. So that was kind of the start of really questioning the whole way we do education. Mm-hmm. And certainly recognize that the way I developed software was so different than what I learned in computer science, especially, and I was kind of at the forefront of object-oriented programming, which this was in the 80s and early 90s. And so we actually were trying to train a bunch of other people. The company I was with was trying to train a couple of people in object-oriented programming. And after getting a couple of classroom education experiences, they said they just needed more help. And when they got the one-on-one help with an expert sitting with one, two, or three developers, we found that the accelerated pace at which they learned was just massive. Mm-hmm. And eventually, the company I was with, Time Knowledge Systems Corporation, coined the term a small talk apprentice program, where we brought in people for an intense one-on-three period for 5 weeks spread over several months. And we watched that what happened with those people who came through there. Basically, in 3 months, we would get the same level or better than people who had been just taking the classroom training and been on their own for a year.
Well, you know, I came through a traditional kind of technical education myself. I've got a degree in engineering, and I took, you know, my share of computer-oriented type stuff. And I had to say that they really just could not produce enough practical experience in the classroom and laboratory environment. You know, so much of what I did as a career were things that I really felt like I picked up once I got on the job.
Well, and, you know, a lot of the textbooks and the equipment that we worked on, because you and I were in engineering together for a time, mm-hmm. were antiquated and outdated by the time they even got to us. And so the things that we learned in college were antiquated by the time that we were ready to use them.
Yeah, and I can't speak for all the other fields. I know this happens in a variety of fields, but in computer science in particular, what's going on in the real world today as far as developing software and what's being taught is a huge difference, not only because of maybe the antiquated equipment, which isn't necessarily as bad these days, but we find that it's often being taught by professors who got their bachelor's, got their associates, got their master's, got their PhDs, and have never programmed in the wild. And then you're doing it in a structure that you know, you're trying to balance your programming class with whatever other classes. And the reality is you maybe have 120, 130 hours of seat time if you study hard for the entire course. And if they're having you do two or three projects, none of your projects end up lasting more than 10 or 20 hours. And, you know, in the real world, we're doing projects that last weeks, months, years. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole lot of things you have to take into consideration when you're building something much bigger. It's kind of like the difference between building a doghouse and building a house you're going to live in. They right. may resemble each other, but there's a lot more you have to think about. And well, you really don't get the experience of house building when you're building doghouses.
Yeah, that is so real because, well, you know, the value of even the summer internships like you talk about, that is so eye-opening when you find yourself having to get into the real world and deal with real-world situations and real-world clients. And you have to, you know, understand how users actually use things. And it's no longer just a theoretical kind of sterile project, but it's, you know, it's something that's real and living in a sort of way. And, and in some situations will actually be used, will actually be something that's a useful product. And so that really increases the learning value of the whole situation, I think.
Yeah, one of the first things I ever tell anybody when I hire them is, I hope you're smart, but I don't pay you to be smart. I pay you to produce something of value. And hopefully your smarts will help you do that. But in the real world, this is the way things work, right? People pay you to produce something of value. And I've interviewed people who had 4.0s in, you know, their studies and have never had a summer job. And I'm not really confident that they're going to be able to hit the ground running and produce something of value for the amount of money they expect because they have a degree.
Well, I think a lot of people just don't even realize that the only way someone can afford to pay you is if you're producing more value than you are being paid.
Right. Yeah, you can certainly get away with one or two deals where you're not doing that, but it's hard to sustain that.
Yeah. So now I know from experience that you've got a full range of people coming into your training program. You've got young guys that have just graduated out of high school, and you've got experienced programmers coming out of industry. I mean, how do you incorporate this wide diversity of experience into a single program?
Well, for one, there's a lot of people doing really poor software development out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of amazing over the, you know, 50, 60 years we've been doing software development that so many people are still doing it poorly. But what I found is, you know, just like you'll have, just because you've been playing basketball for 20 years doesn't mean you're a pro basketball player. And sometimes it's because you just never had a good coach, and sometimes it's because you don't have the stuff.
Yeah.
Right? And other times you may have the stuff, but if you didn't have a good coach, you're going to have some challenges. So what I tend to teach in our academy is, hey, here's the stuff that you may not have learned anywhere and nobody ever held you accountable for. And we're going to try to build a foundation that you may not have picked up. And it's amazing. So whether you have no foundation or whether you have to relearn some things, you know, it kind of works. We have to make sure that they have the basics, just like you wouldn't want to pick up a basketball player, you know, as a coach who's never learned how to dribble, never learned how to pass or whatever else. You know, we need the fundamentals. But one of the things we make sure is if you have the fundamentals and show an aptitude and a passion for doing things well, then that's really the key ingredient we've seen in being successful.
We need to take a moment, Hal.
Yes.
And we need to mention our sponsors.
Yes, we do.
Because this week's broadcast is being sponsored by our friends at SchoolhouseTeachers.com.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been such a blessing to us, and they can be a blessing to you. Because SchoolhouseTeachers.com has over 300 courses that you can do any number of them for any mm-hmm. number of your kids or yourself, too. And the cool thing about it is it's self-timed. You don't have to meet somebody else's schedule. It can fit into your family life, and your kids can do all kinds of amazing things.
Well, you know, we're all about alternative means of education. I mean, we're home educators, right? And so we're open to these things. And I like that SchoolhouseTeachers.com is so affordable that you can try this online education model without committing thousands of dollars or a whole term. Or even hundreds of dollars. You can say, let's try it. Let's see, because it'll work better. Maybe work better with one child than another, or maybe it's just a matter of teachers. But it's so flexible. It's so affordable. You really need to check it out.
And it's cheaper even than driving through on the dollar menu.
That's true. So go to SchoolhouseTeachers.com and get all the information you need there and check out some of their new courses. I just read about a few of them, and you want to hear about that. SchoolhouseTeachers.com.
Okay, so Ken, I want you to tell me, how does the Software Craftsmanship Academy, which is your kind of organized apprenticeship training mm-hmm. for software developers, how does it work? Tell me all about it. Like, when someone comes in, what do you do, and how long does it last, and what does it cost? Tell us everything about it.
Sure. So when people apply, one of the first things we look for is somebody who demonstrates that they've already learned the basics and that they have a passion for wanting to learn how to do this well, not just somebody who's looking for a job. And it's amazing how many applications we get that in spite of we said, hey, your essay should include X, Y, and Z. They just say, hey, can you let me in? And in fact, I don't have any money, so can you give me a scholarship?
Cannot follow that, directions. Cross them off.
Right. But we get some interesting applications. And then once we've seen somebody who shows that, yes, they appreciate that they've learned some things and have a lot more to learn and looking forward to the program, we do a basic skills assessment. We do an interactive skills assessment with them, basically put some problems in front of them and watch them work through the problem. It's not necessarily a pass-fail as far as you have to get so many answers right. It's more of, do you demonstrate that you have the problem-solving skills for software to solve some things? And if we accept them, the list price is $20,000 for the first 3 months. Between you and I, just like colleges, we don't, and anybody who's listening to this podcast, we rarely actually take the whole $20,000 because what we really are looking for is people that we can bring into our company. And we think it's worth actually much more than $20,000. It certainly takes up a lot of solid developers' time. During that 3 months, and anybody who's been through it will tell you they've learned so much, and it'll actually put them in a good position to get a job elsewhere if we didn't take them. But typically, you know, our goal is to get people who get all the way through the 3 months intense program where we throw all kinds of things at them and expect them to be building software. And at the end of the 3 months, we start hooking them up with our developers as apprentices, put them on a combination of projects that will teach them and projects that will actually help customers under the supervision of a professional, and that they do that for usually 6 to 9 months, could be a little bit longer, until we feel like they've demonstrated the ability to be a junior developer, a full-fledged junior developer on a project, which they would still get supervision, of course, at that point, but there's not the concentrated learning. It's now you're going to be learning because you're doing more stuff, not learning because we're nursing you. That's a pretty intense year, but it's been interesting. We've now got, seven people since we started the academy, and then we had about six or seven people we apprenticed informally before that. Every single one of them who, at the end of that year, they were probably making a professional salary, and certainly within 3 to 4 years, they're making far more money and have a lot of experience under the belt versus going to college. So although we do have some college graduates, I don't think we've yet taken a college graduate who had a computer science degree. We actually are taking one in the current academy coming up.
Yes,
but, a lot of them were high school grads, homeschool high school grads. Some of them were just people who had done something else. We're searching for what's next, and had done some programming on the side, and then a few of them they had done some programming, gotten away from it for a few years, and wanted to come back.
For our listeners, one of our sons who graduated with a degree, double major in politics and economics, was thinking to go to graduate school, but he ended up graduating the year of the highest graduate school applications ever. And so he didn't get the money that he needed to go to graduate school, and he didn't want to go into debt. And he ended up going into the Software Craftsmanship Academy, and he still works for Ken. Mm-hmm. He found a love for it. And it was interesting. He learned how to program by learning how to put together our website for RaisingRealMen.com.
Well, he was self-taught in a lot of things. And then he came in and started working with Ken and with Ken's programmers and put a real finish on what he had started by himself. And so, you know, I know that he has really benefited from it, and we've seen the results of this sort of training. And
then we were traveling around. We ended up staying with the Smiths of Simply Charlotte Mason, which some of you listeners may know, and got to talking to their son, Kyle. And Kyle ended up at the academy, too, and he works for Ken, too, now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we've got some personal experience with this. You know, Ken, so let's say you're a high school kid, you're interested in learning how to do this. Where do you start? Where do you begin at the very beginning?
That is such a great question that I've been asked way more times than I can count. And what I pretty much tell people is like, look, pick up some intro to programming and then try to build something that somebody needs. Whether it's a website, whether it's something that, you know, calculates, you know, something for somebody else or whatever. I think you just got to get past the basics. And once you get the basics, you just got to start trying to apply it. And it doesn't really matter which language. I mean, I have my favorite languages. I often tell people who, like a parent will call me and say, my kid seems to be interested in programming. Somebody at church programs in Python, and they mentioned he should learn Python. What do you think of Python? I said, well, it doesn't matter what I think of Python. If he has somebody at church who's willing to help him, go with Python to get started, because then he can pick up another language. But often it's the getting over the hump. You know, when you start trying to do something and you get stuck for the first time and you don't know what to do, people can get discouraged. So you want to learn something where you have somebody who can help you over those humps. And like I said, I really don't I have my preferences, but that's probably more important. Have somebody who can help you when you get stuck than it is what language you learn first or anything like that.
Well, one thing that I saw as I transitioned from, let's say, the manufacturing environment that I was working in for a long time, moving into more of a contract environment, you know, I realized that I would go from one client to the next, and they may have an entirely different system, but there's a commonality to the way systems are designed, the way systems fit together. And you realized that, hey, just the fact that I learned the software for this particular system, that taught me enough about the structure that I could pick it up for a different kind of system fairly quickly. It wasn't like starting over from zero.
Right.
And exactly. I think that's the point you're making, that if you understand some of the basic steps of breaking a problem down into manageable components and then working through, you know, the linkages between them, you're going to do that whether it's in Python, whether it's Ruby on Rails, whether you're doing COBOL or Watt 5. I mean, it's going to be the same sort of thing because that's the way programs work.
Yeah. Learn how to think.
Right.
And which is,
at least at the basic level, yeah.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's some of the value of going to college, is learning how to think about some of these things. And of course, there are things that you can't do if you haven't been to college. You can't be an engineer unless you've been to college. How?
Well, you know, there's things that require certifications and you know, an ABET approved curriculum and that sort of thing. That those are professional requirements and qualifications. There's still a lot of benefit to getting the hands-on experience and getting out into the field.
Yeah.
And
it doesn't have to necessarily be an either or.
No, it doesn't.
Sometimes
it doesn't,
you can do
sure.
that.
Yeah,
absolutely. We have one of the apprentices, actually, that you guys are familiar with, Christian DiLorenzo, went in the program the same time that John did, mm-hmm. your son John. And Christian is actually working for us part-time, and I think he's just completing his bachelor's degree and starting a master's online. So he works for us part-time, and he's gotten some more theory background, some of which has become helpful in his job, some of which has just been an interesting exercise for him.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, I'm not against the college necessarily. You just need to realize what you are getting and what you are not getting.
Right.
Out of it.
Absolutely. And so if someone is interested in the Software Craftsmanship Academy, say that they're already, they've learned a language, they're doing some valuable programming,
mm-hmm.
now they want to prepare for the Software Craftsmanship Academy. What do they need to do? What are the prerequisites for the academy?
Well, if they've done what you've just said, not a whole lot besides write me an interesting essay to describe who they are, and and then we'll talk to them. Again, the key thing is that they can show me that they've built some kind of software before.
Yeah.
And that'll be enough to get us to do the basic skills assessment. And there, we're looking for people who are engaging and knowing how to just work through the problems with the knowledge they already have. That's the best preparation. So I said it's learn the basics and then apply it in some useful way, rather than just doing the following the tutorial and filling in the blanks.
They need to know how to work with people too. You do a lot of pair programming. Talk to us about pair programming.
Yeah, social skills are certainly helpful. Which is interesting because we, you know, we're in an environment where we're, basically working with a lot of geeks who aren't known for their social skills. But, you know, as you're serving people, we, you know, we're a service business. We build software for others. They come to us with an idea and we build it. And, you know, you have to interact with customers and you have to interact with each other. And one of the ways that you get good at programming is you have to be able to take criticism of your work. In fact, during the academy, during the immersion program, You know, I'll give them a problem, and I'll sometimes come in and say, okay, who wants to be the first to offer up a sacrifice of code? Because I'm going to take it and shred it apart and tell them all the things they could do better. You know, not because I like tearing them apart, but because I like showing them how they can do things better. And you need to be able to have thick skin and a tender heart as you're doing that. You need to be able to work with others as you're offering criticism and as you're getting it. So that's something we're also looking for as we're interacting with people. Do you have those skills? Or often it's, do you have a heart to get those skills?
Yes.
I've worked with many software developers over the years who really couldn't care less about the people they're writing the software for.
You know, it's funny you should mention...
That's a real challenge.
It's funny you should mention that, Ken, because I remember John telling us that he walked into a client's office and sat down and said, talk to me about what you want, how you want to use this software. How do you foresee using it? What do you talk to me about what you want the experience to be? And the client was floored. They said nobody had ever asked him that before. And it's like,
amazing.
Yeah. And John was shocked. He said, how could they not have been asked that before?
Yeah. And that's certainly something we, you know, that's one of the things we train, in our academy, is how important it is to be able to do that. And that, you know, we are building this software for people, people who are subject matter experts who are probably funding it in some way, directly or indirectly, or people who are going to be using the software. And, it's really important to understand what they want out of it in order to build a good software.
Well, one of the things I like about this is it's a real life application of a biblical principle, the idea that we are here to serve one another, and that, you know, we look at our clients and they're not just a cash cow. They're somebody that they're a real person who has real needs, and we are trying to address their needs, maybe anticipate their needs, maybe help them clarify their needs, and then supply what's lacking. And that, you know, that kind of, that's a practical expression of love, I think. And I think that's a very good Christian model to take into business.
Well, you know, the best model for business is we do well by doing well. You know, we, by doing good for others, then that blesses us financially too.
Amen.
Well, look, Ken, let's, can you give us a website or some contact information for people that might be interested in either the Academy or in Role Model Software in your larger mission?
Sure. Role Model Software is just what you'd expect. RoleModelSoftware.com. ROLEMODEL Software.com. That's our business here. And the Craftsmanship Academy is thecraftsmanshipacademy.com.
So it's the Craftsmanship Academy? The T-H-E is part of the URL?
C-R-A-F-T.
Okay.
Okay.
S-M-A-N.
Right.
Okay.
A-C-A-D-A-E-M-Y. Yeah. Craftsmanshipacademy.com.
Okay.
So they will find entry. Now, we only run the Academy about every 18 to 24 months. We only take in so many junior people. Sometimes people hear about this, and I'll talk about this, and people say, oh, so you're a company that trains software developers. No, we're a company that writes software. And in order to do that, we have to train up some junior guys every once in a while. And we found that just trying to hire somebody off the street who doesn't know what they don't know is more expensive and less beneficial in the long run than taking somebody who realizes what they don't know. And then we can train them up in those things. So that's how we bring in our junior developers every couple of years. And they become more senior developers, we bring in another round. So this isn't something that we start every 2 months or whatever. This is, you know, the one coming up, we're looking for applications starting July 1st. No later than July 1st to start in the fall.
Okay.
And it'll probably be the first one we've done in almost 2 years, and we probably won't do another one for at least another 18 months.
All right. So, one last question.
We only take in 4 people.
Okay. 4 people, 4 slots. Ken, one more question. That $20,000 price tag looks huge to a homeschool family. How does somebody come up with that kind of money? And are there any alternatives?
Yes, absolutely. So, for one, we offer scholarships to the people that we are most impressed with.
Great.
That could be half or, in some cases the entire thing. Again, we're really interested in developing our own junior developers, and the more confident we are they're going to work out, the better. On the flip side, we need people to recognize this isn't a public school education that's paid for by our tax dollars.
Yes.
You're taking up a lot of highly skilled and highly paid professionals' time, and we just try to encourage people to recognize that's what you're doing, and recognize that you kind of have to pay your dues when you get in there. So, there's lots of ways to come up with $5,000 or $10,000, and that'd probably be a whole nother show.
Sure.
I don't know.
It would.
And we're about out of time.
To a 4-year education.
Yeah.
I wonder how many people give up 4 years of their time and all that money to get a 4-year education. And as I said, most of our folks, by the time they're 15 to 18 months after they started our program, they're better off. We got a couple 21-year-olds right now who just bought their own house because, they avoided college and came through the academy instead. So how do they come up with that first 5 or 10? Don't know, but I think it's a cheaper deal than college.
Great.
Well, certainly,
we end up paying them a stipend after the first 3 months if we keep them.
Great.
That's terrific. Well, we've been talking with Ken Auer. He is the founder and the principal of Role Model Software and also the leading man behind the Software Craftsmanship Academy, which is where they are using an apprenticeship model to develop the next generation of programmers and developers. Ken, we do appreciate your time.
Yeah. Well, thank you for inviting me.
All right, folks, and we're out of time, so we've got to go. Thank you for joining us at Making Biblical Family Life Practical.
You know, our mission is to help you take the timeless truth of Scripture into the 21st century family, and we try to bring some advice along those lines every week, and we do appreciate you being here. Hey, why don't you check us out on iTunes? You can get a subscription. You can become a regular downloader there, and we appreciate that if you subscribe on iTunes or through Google Play's got us now.
All right.
So, look, until next week, thanks for joining us. I'm Hal.
I'm Melanie.
God bless you for listening.
Bye, y'all.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Hal and Melanie or Facebook.com/Raising Real Men. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.